Hey Trey.
Hey man.
We did it once again.
These silly little systems,
Yeah. So man, I'm really glad you called. I was just
yeah.
talking a bit about you to my listeners here,
Right on.
and introducing you to those of you to those people who haven't actually heard about you before or
All
heard
right.
our last interview.
Yes.
So, I guess just first off, for those people who don't know about you, let's let you introduce yourself and see, or let's maybe tell people who you are.
All right. Yeah, well, again, I really appreciate it, Matt, and all the folks out there for availing me the opportunity to share a little bit about myself and my story. And my name is Trey Arrow, and I was born in the States and have lived there for quite a while. I've done quite a bit of traveling, but I basically am from the States, and I've been involved in a wide range of social issues and environmental activism. For quite a while, and I basically have become a bit of a nemesis, a bit of a thorn in the side to the corporate agenda within the U.S. Government and the corporate mentality and stuff, a corporate agenda. And the FBI is targeting me because not because I'm guilty of anything criminal. Not because I'm a threat, and but because I've been involved in activism, and I've been involved in very effective campaigns that help to stop some destruction of ancient forest within the logging sales, predominantly in the state of Oregon is where I've been active. I mean, obviously logging goes on all over. What last little bit of ancient forest is left, they're trying to take here in BC, and what little bit is left in northwestern northwest US. And so basically, you know, part of the way that the FBI operates, for folks that might not know, is that literally part of their MO is to disrupt and dismantle and neutralize groups and people that they view as subversive. And this can range anything from the American Indian movement and striving for indigenous rights to the anti-war movement in the 60s and currently as well, and the Black Panther Party and other civil rights issues and also in environmental issues. And there have been, I am just one of many activists that have been targeted for our actions, for taking a stand against the destruction of this planet and the corporate greed and the lies within the government, and how it's all, the government and the corporations are all basically, you know, complicit in not only the destruction of this planet, but violation of human rights and desecration of sacred habitat for our non-human animal friends and so forth. So, one big action that I've been well known for is it was basically known as the ledge sit in July of 2000, and I basically spontaneously climbed the Forest Service building and perched myself there on a 9-inch ledge for 11 days, about 10 meters above the ground, and it caught international attention, and it was in protest of this one particular sale called Eagle Creek in Oregon, which was, you know, a hugely contentious sale and an issue. You know, it's drinking water, it's a watershed for thousands of Oregonians, it's endangered species habitat for spotted owl and other fine little critters and wildlife, and it's also some of the last bit of ancient forest. And that action, again, it caught international attention, and it was very effective, and it was very helpful. It was one of the key factors in turning the tide, really, in this decade-long struggle to help save this area, and eventually we were able to get that sale canceled. And I really feel that I pretty much know, actually, that was one of the main reasons why I came onto the FBI's radar as far as someone that needs to be silenced, basically. And so now what they're doing is they're accusing me of arson. Logging trucks burn and some cement trucks burn in the year of 2001 in Oregon, and they are trying to affiliate me with these actions. And three people have already pled guilty to these arsons, and in exchange for a hugely reduced sentence, they were all facing possibly 80 years, and they received less than 3.5 years. They implicated me, and now the FBI and the U.S. government is trying to extradite me back to the States. I'm currently in Canada, locked up at North Fraser Pretrial Center in BC, outside of Vancouver, and I've been locked up almost a year and a half now, opposing extradition and trying to state my case, and I've been emphatically declaring my innocence and you know, calling attention to the fact that this is politically motivated, this is a politically motivated extradition, and this is a highly political case. And again, it's not because I'm guilty of arson, but because I've been an effective activist as to why I'm being targeted and why I'm, you know, locked up. And it's, you know, definitely not a very fun thing for someone like me, especially, like, I've never been locked up before, and I love being able to be in touch with the natural world, like spending time with the trees and having some grass under my feet and grandfather's sun on my face and stuff. So that's a bit about me and what's mm-hmm. going on with my situation.
Yeah, you've been in jail for about a year and a half now?
This, in September, so just a little over a month, it'll be 18 months. So it's, yeah, closing in on 18 months.
Yeah. And can you tell us a bit about the recent extradition hearing and how you feel about that?
Yeah, so just about a month ago, I had my extradition hearing, and it took place in the Supreme Court of BC. And I felt like we had a fair judge as far as judges go, and it could have been worse. It could have, you know, the judge could have been much more hostile and unwilling to have my lawyer present some of the arguments that he did. I felt like my lawyer, you know, was well prepared. He spent a lot of time and energy and research into formulating and presenting the arguments and the submissions, and at the end of the hearing, it lasted for 3 days, and she took a week to deliberate and to decide, and then she issued her decision. The judge, that is, a week later on July 8th, and so it hasn't even been quite a month since I've had the decision, and she decided that there wasn't enough. That there was enough evidence to extradite me, and that all of the arguments and submissions that my lawyer made were basically, she basically denied and rejected. And so, yeah, I mean, it was definitely frustrating. It wasn't necessarily surprising, though. I knew what, you know, kind of to expect, and what, and the whole bureaucratic procedure of it all, and how the way that the system is set up now, not only our government, but what I call the injustice, justice system, and the criminal, the criminal system, and the prison industrial complex. It's really not about peace and justice and what's right or wrong. It's all about maintaining, you know, the status quo and keeping the powers that be in power, and keeping, the poorer and folks that are challenging the status quo really, you know, don't. It's really hard to have our day heard in court, really, in my opinion, on a legal justice kind of level. And the way that it's set up, the whole bureaucracy, and really the corruption within the government, and how the U.S. and Canada have basically drafted this treaty back in the 70s that will basically turn over anybody for just about anything, and at the same time, there's so little power, really. There's so little jurisdiction that the judge overseeing the extradition hearing has, that it's it's just kind of a game of passing the buck and not really taking responsibility for justice into their hands. You know, they basically, you know, are judges and have certain roles, and their roles are very limited, you know, and it's all about just, again, passing the buck to the Minister of Justice and, you know, basically saying to my lawyer, well, I don't have the jurisdiction to hear these arguments. And again, some of the arguments that my lawyer were presenting were that this is a politically motivated case, and that I'm being targeted, I'm being persecuted, and that I can't get a fair trial in the States, and something like possibly that you've touched upon, how the media and the government and the FBI has already branded me not only as guilty, but they're trying to allege that I'm the T word, which I don't even like to repeat. But the media continues to use that word in association to me and my name and actions and stuff, and so it's going to be very, very difficult to get a fair trial based on all of the media attention and all the negative slander that has been, a part of that media attention around my name and my case. And, again, at the end of the day, the judge basically said, "Well, take it up with the minister." You know, so it's really, again, just almost like an exercise in futility and so much wasted time and energy and dead tree paper, and it's and again, the whole bureaucracy of it all is somewhat somewhat daunting and overwhelming. And at the same time, you know, I'm keeping the faith and keeping strong in the ear and doing what I can to still get the word out to people about what's going on and continue to work on my defense and the appeal. We are appealing the decision, and so we're, you know, putting that whole process in motion. And you know, I'll have my court of appeal like hearing probably sometime between now and Christmas probably, and it still could be several months or even, you know, some years actually until this is all decided, and I'm either allowed to stay in Canada or I'm finally extradited. And you know, and so there's definitely still a lot ahead and a lot of time that's involved.
I'm wondering how you changed as a person since the hearing, and since, well, you've been in jail for a long time, but specifically since you know, the recent hearing, and kind of what we expected, like we hoped, but also expected, like a failure of the justice system.
Yes.
But I'm just curious to know how you've been changing, like spiritually or politically, these days.
Can you say that again? You want to know,
how you've changed,
how things are changing for me politically?
Just how, what's it like to be you, and how you've changed as a person, either spiritually or politically, in general, what kind of transition or process you've gone through throughout this?
Yeah, it's definitely been a very interesting experience, and I appreciate you asking that, you know, because I definitely feel every experience that we encounter has the potential to offer growth and awareness and healing, and you know, no matter how difficult or how negative it may seem, you know. So I definitely have tried to, you know, stay strong through all this and look at what you know, I'm experiencing, and try to move through it and learn from it and grow from it. And I feel like it's definitely been a very powerful experience, both spiritually and politically. And I feel like I'm still progressing and I'm still evolving. And you know, by no means am I you know, infallible. And and I feel like I am, you know, getting, you know, I still have continued to do what I can politically in here, you know, through my words and getting the music that I've composed out to people, and you know, and doing these kinds of interviews so I can still get my voice out to people, and not only let them know a bit about what's going on with me and my situation and my case, but also to, you know, possibly encourage and inspire people to, you know, become more active and more aware and involved in not only their daily lives, but in you know, the greater social issues that are really plaguing and affecting every one of us, whether it's here in Canada or whether it's you know, throughout North America or whether it's throughout the world. You know, all of these issues, whether it's the environment, whether it's you know, political oppression, political prisoners, whether it's non-human animal issues, whether it's human rights issues. You know, we all play a part in this, and we all, you know, are affected by it. So, you know, I feel like the more that we can do, whether we're locked up or not, to try to bring about some justice in this world and more respect and honor towards every living thing, and to try to dismantle, you know, some of this intense corruption and oppression that, you know, that we are all, again, affected by. You know, I feel is something that, you know, if all of us can do that, then all the better for every living thing, you know. And I definitely have been able to stay connected to the spirit world in here with, you know, I say prayers and do meditation every day, and have tried to keep up some of the daily practice that I've done on the outs, you know, before I was arrested, like, you know, some yoga and Qigong and being able to, even though I can't feel the grass under my feet, still try to, you know, focus on the beautiful energy that flows from Earth Mother and be able to conjure that up and tap into Father Sky and be able to get some rays from Grandfather Sun and Grandmother Moon right on my face and skin, and that's definitely helped. And yeah, so I feel like it's, you know, again, it's definitely been a very challenging experience, and I think both politically and spiritually I'm continuing to learn things and evolve and to get stronger and continue to get those messages out to people, you know, that that activism and spirituality really are, you know, all they're all interconnected as well. You know, there's like the four directions and the four elements, the spiritual, the emotional, the mental, and the physical, and the four colors of the world as far as the peoples go, like the red and the black and the yellow and the white, and you know, all these dimensions are all interconnected, and I think it can give great great strength and great direction to activism on whatever level people choose to you know, engage it, to incorporate, you know, the spiritual realm as well, in whatever way that manifests for people and whatever that means to people.
Mm-hmm. That's great. One of the things that I, as well as a lot of the people who heard our last interview back in April, I think it may have been, really found particularly inspiring was when I asked you, you know, what could people do to help you out? I think you went off for about 5 minutes just on basically like living and loving more and playing more, and eventually you mentioned a few things about helping yourself, but we're all pretty inspired about the selflessness, you know.
Thanks.
And I look forward to the day when we can be playing in forests together, you know.
Absolutely. Well, I really, again, man, for sure, like, appreciate your words and your encouragement, and you know, I think, you know, again, giving me the chance to get some words out to people, and thank you for the compliment, and I think that's the key, really, is that, you know, that's why I try to focus, you know, my words and my actions on, and that's how my website's geared up, too, and it's actually going to be even more so, that, you know, it's not just about me and about my you know, trials and tribulations and what's happening to me in my case, but you know, but kind of the greater picture. Like, I always, you know, there's a great Native saying that goes, in every deliberation we must consider the next seven generations, and I really resonate with that, and I really practice that in literally my every thought and action and deliberation. And you know, and I think that's the key, that if we focus on what we need and what makes us happy and brings us joy, and also what we can do as a people to make this world a more healthy, loving, happy, peaceful place, then that's the key, you know, then we're fulfilling our, you know, in my opinion, our highest good, for ourselves and for every living thing. And I definitely always encourage people to do what they can, you know, to make this world, again, a more healthy, loving, peaceful place in whatever way they see fit, in whatever shape that takes for people, you know, whether it's, you know, switching to a vegan diet from a non-vegan diet and eating more raw food, you know, to, you know, taking direct action and, you know, living in trees or locking down and blocking roads from, so disallowing the destruction of ancient forests and sacred land and sacred habitat and people's drinking water, or whether it's, you know, being involved in you know, political prisoners and POWs and a various amount of civil and human rights issues, or, you know, again, more non-human animal issues and purchases, you know, and food choices, like what, you know, people, those of us that are privileged enough to buy things and live in this, you know, Western kind of, you know, society, you know, have amazing power in just what we choose to purchase or boycott, you know, and you know, as far as reusing things and recycling things and making the most out of what resources have already been taken and used, so that way we have to take even less, you know, and looking, you know, and being aware and looking at how we live in North America as opposed to the majority of the world's population, because we only make up a small fraction of the world's population, and not everybody lives like we do here. Not everyone lives in this crazy pace of working and consuming and material acquisition and dumping a lot of things into a landfill every day that could actually be used and given to people and fed to people and stuff. So I think, you know, these are definitely things that, you know, I encourage people to think about and focus on. And again, Matt, much love to you and respect to you, and let's keep in touch, and I'll try to touch base with you next Wednesday. And again, I really appreciate the support and letting me get the word out to folks.
Hmm. Well, I'm glad you called.
Yeah.
And I just want you to know that a lot of upon hearing of the BC judge's ruling that you should, you know, support your extradition.
Yes.
A lot of us were pretty touched and pretty sad to hear that.
Yes.
No matter what happens, Steve, right now you're serving as quite a catalyst for a lot of conversations and a lot of, you know, critical perspectives upon our system and, you know, the whole legal system in general and the political system.
Yes.
So there's a lot of good things coming out of it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And again, Matt, thanks for your words and thanks for the support and the solidarity and the sympathy. And I think that's the key, right? You know, that, again, just to, you know, not just with purchases and food choices and what we can do as people as far as engaging in activism, but really just taking a step back, man, you know, like turning off the TV and you know, setting down the newspaper or the magazines and talking with each other and living and working more in communities and in circles and sharing and again, taking a step back and really looking at what's going on, not necessarily what people are telling you or what you see on the TV, but you know, doing some research, doing some reading, checking out some alternative non-mainstream media sources and you know, ask yourself, like, is this real? Is this just? Is this peaceful? Is this loving? Is this respectful? And if not, like, well, is there another way? You know, is there another way to live? Is there another way to act? Is there another way to still have the things that we want, that we feel we need, and without having so much oppression and destruction as a result? You know, and that you know, and there's so many dimensions to that, you know, concept. And it affects every living thing, and it affects every dimension of our lives, whether we're entangled in the justice system or injustice system or not. You know, it's very important for us to take a step back and have a critical look, you know, have a critical eye on what's going on within the governments, within corporations, and how we are part of that and how we are affected by that, and what we can do to change it for the better, you know, for every living thing.
That's awesome.
Right on, man.